getting fitter, improving your cardiovascular fitness. A lot of people say, I want to get fit, but let's have a look at what exactly fitness is. Now, fitness can be measured in many different ways, but it comes back down to specificity. Now, someone who in the Olympics wins the 5-kilometer race does not always win the 10K race, does not win the marathon, because fitness is very specific to how you train. If you watch the Olympics, and obviously that's the extreme level, is that you won't have the 800 and the 1500 and the 5K and the 10K and the marathon being the one winner. There will seem to be different winners. There might be similar runners who win the 800 and 1500, or runners who win the 5K and the 10K. But really, we get someone who covers all of them. So fitness, even cardiovascular fitness, is very specific to the distance and the duration, and obviously that would determine the intensity. So the ultimate question is, fit for what? People say, I want to get fit. Well, the question is, fit for what? I know that training my father many, many years ago, who was in his 70s when I first started training him, you know, he just wanted to be fit enough to play golf, walk the golf course, push his golf cart around, and do his gardening. And that, to him, is fit for his life. Let alone if you look at training someone who wants to run a marathon, they need to be fit enough to run a marathon. Someone wants to run a 10K, they have to be fit enough to run a 10K or 5K. So be very careful when you look at fitness. It is very, very specific. And sometimes you see these programs on TV, the fittest person in the world, or the fittest athlete in the world, or this person is the fittest person. Well, that depends on how you measure it. You know, a lot of these fitness tests might be anaerobic, or they might be aerobic, or a combination of. So please don't ever be naive or ignorant enough to think that this person is the fittest person in the world, because that person won't be very fit in another type of sport. They'll still be fit compared to the general population, but not necessarily at the elite level. So when you're dealing with any client who wants to get fit, it's very important to understand how they want to measure fitness. For example, in my sport, my fitness has to be measured in minutes, because my sport of martial arts only goes for a round of fighting, and it goes for 2 minutes with a 1 minute rest and the 2 minutes, and that's it. And I may have a series of bouts. So all of my training never goes over 1 minute. I don't actually do any cardiovascular training over 1 minute. The reason why it's never over 1 minute, because the intensity in 1 minute is never ever sustained over 2 minutes in a real fight, because you have lots of different breaks and stuff like that. So, you know, it's very important that you look at what the person wants to get fit for and how you're actually going to measure that. But today's session is going to go a bit deeper than that, because, you know, the foundation of competence gives you confidence. So I'm going to go into the physiological contributions to increase people's fitness. And that may vary depending on how you apply that to different events. However, you may get someone, as Terry mentioned, who's really unfit, and how to get them started. I always remember doing a national speaking tour. Myself and Rory were touring with three other speakers around Australia. And of all things, it was called a Women's Empowerment Day, and I was invited along. I was the only male speaker. But Ro and I were talking about exercise and training. Lisa Curry-Kenny, one of Australia's Olympians and Commonwealth Gold medalists, was speaking on women and fitness. Ida Buttrose, who was a very successful editor for the Women's Weekly back then, a national iconic magazine in Australia, she was speaking on women empowerment. I mean, there's another lady called Heather Turlin. And Heather Turlin, she had just won the Commonwealth Games marathon. And she had a real interesting story, and you could probably relate to this, Terry, is that, you know, they asked her how she started. You know, how did she become a Commonwealth Gold medalist? And she shared this great story that she was a house mum, and a very, very unfit house mum. so unfit that she couldn't run. She wasn't even fit enough to jog. So what she used to do is she used to basically just walk to the letterbox and back, and because she used to live on a property, and then she'd walk a little bit further and back, and walk a little bit further and back, and walk. Then eventually she started walking around the block. And then once she got around the block, then she would walk, and then she would jog from one electricity pole to the next, and then walk and catch her breath. Then jog from one electricity pole to the next and catch her breath. And eventually she could, over time, jog around the block. And then over time she continued to just build on that jogging, building on the distance, building the intensity over a long period of time. And to the stage where she started going into social running events, and eventually she became the Commonwealth Games gold medalist in marathon running. So how did she start? Well, she started as a house mum who couldn't even jog, could barely even, she was catching her breath walking up a hill. And over time she slowly, through slow, progressive, logical, common sense, increasing volume and intensity, she got to the stage where she was fit enough to become an elite athlete. So the application is going to be very different depending on who you're dealing with. I always remember working with a very obese gentleman called, his name was Trent, and all we used to do is the biggest iconic movement was iconic achievement was actually getting him walking around the block. Now this guy was 150 kilograms plus. But you know, over time, it took us quite a while, but eventually he got to a stage where he was actually jogging. So fitness, the beautiful thing about fitness, it can be improved if you slowly and progressively progress your volume and intensity. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. But what I want to talk about first is how do you actually get fitter? How does that occur physiologically? So obviously all the systems have to work together, you know, from the nervous system, the muscular system, the respiratory system, the cardiovascular system, the hormonal system. All of those systems work in a cooperative way to become overall more upgraded and more efficient. Now, the upgrade or the progression comes with a stimulus, and we already know about the progressive overload. You apply a controlled load, a load that the body's not accustomed to, that applies a stress on the body, and the body is an adaptive organism that is continually adapting to its environment. So if you spend all your life sitting in a chair doing nothing, the body will adapt to that environment and will lose its strength and lose its capabilities because it doesn't need all these extra capabilities if you're not doing anything with it. The old saying, if you don't use it, you lose it. On the other hand, if you use it, you start to build it. So the stimulus for growth, the stimulus for progression is stress, controlled progressive stress or controlled progressive stimulus. So the type of stimulus will determine what systems will start to adapt. So if it's more of a muscular stimulus, you get stronger. If it's more of a cardiovascular stimulus, you start getting fitter, I suppose, when you look at cardiovascular fitness. So tonight's topic is on cardiovascular fitness, but we can't necessarily neglect the muscular component because obviously what the cardiovascular systems drives the muscular systems. So let's go to the obvious components that contribute to increasing your cardiovascular fitness, which means the efficiency of the cardiovascular system and the respiratory system. Now, we all know the cardiovascular system is made up of the heart and all the blood vessels and the blood. So that supplies to the working muscles oxygen, it supplies your hormones, your macro and your micronutrients and your enzymes. And it also is responsible for getting rid of waste products such as lactic acid, carbon dioxide as well. So that's the role of the cardiovascular system. So what are the adaptations occur there? Well, first of all, how does the blood get down to the working muscles? It gets pumped by the heart, therefore the heart pumps. And that's what we call, as you know, a heartbeat. Now, the heart is the pump that pumps the blood. Now, it will pump so many heartbeats per minute. So we call that your heart rate. Your heart rate is the number of beats that your heart contracts per minute. Obviously, we measure it in minutes. The other component is not just how many times it beats, but when it does beat or contract, when the muscle contracts or the left ventricle pumps blood out to the working muscles, how much blood does it pump per contraction? And that measures the capacity of the heart or the capacity of the pump. And the volume of blood that the heart pumps out per contraction is called what you call your stroke volume. So your stroke volume is the amount of blood that the heart pumps out per contraction. Now, therefore, your overall cardiac output, your cardiac output, is basically the amount of blood that is pumped out by the heart per minute. And that determines how much blood is pumped down to the working muscles per minute. So the cardiac output is equal to your heart rate, the number of beats per minute, multiplied by your stroke volume, which is the volume of blood that's pumped out per contraction. So stroke volume times heart rate will equal your cardiac output. And that's going to have the major significant effect on your cardiac or your aerobic capacity, because that determines how much oxygen gets to the working muscles. As you know, you need oxygen to produce energy aerobically. So what happens as you train over a period of time by using progressive overload? In cardiovascular, that progressive overload might be by increasing intensity, which is your speed of running or cycling, or the incline of running or cycling, or the resistance of load of on the running or cycling. Resistance in running might be you carry a weight, or resistance on a bike, you increase the resistance on the pedals. So over time, the most important or the most significant change is you will increase your stroke volume. It means you increase your heart's ability to pump more blood per contraction. So if you can contract more, if you can pump more blood per contraction, then you can get more blood and most of all oxygen down to the working muscles to produce energy. So we already know that your maximal heart rate is pretty well set, and it varies, I understand that, but your maximal heart rate is determined by the calculation of 220 minus your age. So 220 minus your age, so if you're 20 years of age, the maximal number of beats that your heart can get up to is around about 200. For example, just before I came back from overseas, I made sure I had a good hard cardiovascular workout, and I always measure my heart rate. Now, for me, my maximal heart rate is 220 minus 52. So that's 168. So I know that if I'm doing interval work or cardiovascular work, I ideally want to get my heart rate up to 90% at least of maximal heart rate, which is well into the 160s. So and I definitely feel like I'm working at around about 90%. If I had to give myself a PRE scale measurement, perceived rate of exertion, and someone says, how hard did you work then? I'd say about a 9, and my heart rate tends to reflect that. So if you're honest with yourself, PRE is fairly accurate when it comes to measurement of your maximal heart rate. So what basically happens is, so if you have a look at two things occur. If you look at rest, just say, for example, you have a resting heart rate of 90 beats per minute, which is probably the average person who's healthy but not necessarily athletically fit. So as they start training, certainly their heart rate goes up during training. But what that affects is that affects your stroke volume. So over time, their stroke volume will go up. So at rest, to get the same amount of blood to the working muscles, which is what we call 1 met. 1 met is the amount of blood that is required to get to the working muscles at rest. So 1 met is equivalent to, if you look at measurement point of view, 3.5 milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight. So don't get too wrapped up into that. But basically, to keep the body functioning, for average, it's 3.5 milliliters of oxygen per kilogram of body weight, which is equal to 1 met. So As that person's stroke volume improves or increases, then their ability to provide oxygen to the working muscle is enhanced. So if you have a set rate or a set amount of blood you need to the working muscles and your stroke volume is higher, then what will naturally happen at rest is your resting heart rate will come down because you won't have to contract the heart as many beats per minute to get the same amount of blood to the working muscles to sustain energy levels at rest. So over time, that person's resting heart rate may come down to 80, down to 70, and the fitter they get, obviously the greater the stroke volume goes up, the less beats the heart needs to contract to get the same amount of blood to the working muscles. So if you had a little pump versus a big pump, the little pump will have to pump far more times per minute to get the same amount of blood out to the working muscles as the big pump. So that's why as you get fitter, your heart rate actually comes down. Now, how about an exercise? So if say for an exercise, if you maintain the same speed or force production, I'll use an example. So just say that unfit person, they hop on a treadmill, they're at 90 beats per minute at rest, and they get up to, say, 10 kilometers per hour on the treadmill. So now at 10 kilometers per hour, they need a lot more oxygen per minute to sustain energy production to keep the legs moving at 10 kilometers an hour. So their heart rate may go up to, say, 160 beats per minute. So it goes up to 160. And it will tend to level off. It will level off at 160 because at 160 beats per minute, the heart's getting enough blood to the muscle to sustain energy production to keep the legs running at 10 kilometers an hour. So their heart rate will go up to 160 and it will equalize at 160. Now, as they get fitter and they maintain 10 kilometers an hour, then what will happen at 10 kilometers an hour, their heart rate will come down. So as they get fitter, maybe in 4 weeks' time, the heart rate will only go up to 150 beats per minute. Because the stroke volume's gone up, they can sustain 10 kilometers an hour at 150 beats because the pump's bigger. So now you can actually work at the same intensity at a lower heart rate as you get fitter. So not only at rest, your heart rate's lower, but at the same intensity of exercise, your heart rate's lower. So that's the second change that occurs, is that you can keep the same intensity, but the heart rate's lower, therefore the stress is lower. So you feel far more comfortable running at 10 kilometers at 150 beats per minute as you did at 160 beats per minute, because at 160, you're closer to your maximal heart rate, and you're probably closer to what we call your anaerobic threshold, where you cannot remove the amount of lactic acid as it accumulates, so therefore you start to fatigue. The third thing that also occurs is you can maintain the same heart rate but go at a higher intensity. So now instead of staying at 10 kilometers an hour, you can go up to 11 kilometers an hour and sustain the 160 beats per minute. But before, at 160 beats per minute, you could only do 10 kilometers an hour. But now you can do 11 kilometers an hour at 160 beats per minute. So they're the three significant changes that stroke volume has. Number one, your resting heart rate comes down. Number two, at exercise, you can sustain the same intensity at a lower heart rate and the lower perceived rate of exertion and the lower level of stress. Or number three, you can keep the same heart rate but do more work at that heart rate, where you have to accomplish more work or generate more force production at that heart rate, meaning go faster. So they're the significant changes that occur as you get fitter in terms of stroke volume. And as your stroke volume goes up, obviously everything becomes a lot easier because you have a greater pump to supply all your working muscles, not just with oxygen, but also all the other macro and micronutrients required for energy production. Now, there are many other physiological changes, and I just go through them in briefly because it's important that you as a fitness professional know some of these changes. First of all, you, over time, the body changes its hemoglobin concentration. What that basically means is hemoglobin is the molecule that carries oxygen and carbon dioxide around the body. So it's a carrier, it's like a tip truck, carries oxygen molecules or your red blood cells. So therefore, if you've got more trucks carrying oxygen or red blood cells, you've got more oxygen in the blood. So you get a greater concentration of hemoglobin, as well as a greater concentration of myoglobin. Myoglobin means muscle, means the globin in the muscle. So you carry more oxygen in the muscle as well, not just in the blood. And over time, people who get fitter, the body will adapt by increasing your blood volume. So greater blood volume, greater capacity to carry hemoglobin. Other aerobic changes, you improve your aerobic enzymes, concentrations. Enzymes is a form of a protein that acts as a catalyst to speed up metabolic processes. So basically, when aerobic processes take place or aerobic metabolic processes take place, enzymes is there to speed up that process. I guess if you look at an enzyme and hormones, I'll use this analogy. If you want to produce energy in a fireplace, for example, and in the fireplace you have your wood and you have your kipling and you have your paper, and you really want to get that fire burning to produce energy, think of the fireplace as like the mitochondria. The mitochondria is the aerobic energy cell where aerobic energy is produced. You have to have a matchbox. Your matchbox is your gland, your glands in your body. You have your matches, which is your hormones. Your matches is your hormones because your hormones trigger metabolic processes. So your matches is your hormones. But if you really want to speed up that ignition, I suppose, or igniting the fire to produce energy, then you throw a bit of petrol on it. And petrol will be like an enzyme. It speeds up that process where the match is the hormone, the matchbox is the gland, and the petrol is the enzymes that speed up that processes. So basically that's what enzymes do. So basically as you get more conditioned, you get a greater improvement in your aerobic enzymes. You also have some changes in your storage of your macronutrients. People who get fitter, they get an increase in what we call fat droplets. Fat droplets is the storage of fat in the intramuscular, intramuscular-wise. So a lot of people carry fat subcutaneous between the obviously between the muscle and the skin, or visceral fat, which is in amongst the organs. But elite athletes, aerobic condition athletes, carry the fat in the muscle tissue. They carry it in the cells of the muscle. Why? Because that's where it's needed. It's because it also in the muscle is your mitochondria. So now the fat is stored right close to the fireplace. The wood is stored, because I always use the analogy of fat is like wood to a fireplace and carbohydrate is like paper to a fireplace. So the wood is really close to the fireplace. So if you get a greater storage of a concentration of fat droplets, if you look at a muscle biopsy of an aerobic marathon runner, they'll have fat stored in the intramuscular wise, close to the mitochondria. An aerobic conditioned athlete will also have a greater capacity to store glycogen stores in the cells of the muscles, again close to the mitochondria. And aerobic conditioned athlete will get a greater what we call mitochondria concentration or mitochondria density. They actually have more mitochondria in the muscles, so they have greater aerobic energy producing cells, or more fireplaces to burn the fat and the carbohydrate to produce energy aerobically. And then obviously these are some of the structural changes that occur in muscle. Not to mention that you get improved efficiency of oxygen usage. So the diffusion of oxygen between the lungs and the blood is enhanced. That transfer from oxygen between the cells through the cells of the alveoli in the lungs, that's greater. You get a greater what we call partial pressure, and the enzymes improve that transference of oxygen into the blood, as well as the transfer of carbon dioxide out of the blood, so you can breathe and expire that out. Not to mention the diffusion of the oxygen and carbon dioxide down at a cellular level, down in the muscles, where it transfers from the blood into the muscles to be used in the mitochondria to produce energy via what we call the Krebs cycle. And the Krebs cycle basically is breaking down your oxygen and your carbon, your fat, which is made up of carbon and hydrogen molecules, and your carbohydrate, which is made up of CHO, which is your carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen molecules. And the Krebs cycle breaks all those molecules apart and produces energy aerobically. That produces enough energy to rebuild, as you probably know when you get into it, 149 ATPs for energy. Now, the byproduct of that is water, H2O, and carbon dioxide. H2O is H2O, H2O, H-O, carbon dioxide is CO2. So you see, what goes in still comes out. So what goes in is fat, CH, and carbohydrate, CHO, and what comes out is water, HO, and carbon dioxide, CO. So the same thing goes in that comes out, but it's just rebuilt differently as a waste product when you look at it from a chemical point of view. So you get this more efficiency of oxygen usage. You will also get a change in what we call respiratory quotient. Respiratory quotient, or what we call your respiratory exchange ratio. What that basically means is what substrates of energy the body will tap into. So obviously your respiratory quotient is determined of, does your body use fat or carbohydrate as its main source of energy? And as you get fitter, you tap more into your fat storage and start to reserve your carbohydrate storage. For two reasons. A, if your body starts tapping into your carbohydrate storage, then you're more likely to get a byproduct of lactic acid that will tend to fatigue you. Plus, you only have limited supply of carbohydrate storage that lasts you no more than 2 hours of aerobic activity. So as you get fitter, the body recognizes, hey, we'll tap into the fat storage so we can reserve or preserve the carbohydrate storage. That way we can go for longer than 2 hours. Plus, we will minimize the buildup of lactic acid that will lead to fatigue and a decrease in performance. So as with conditioning, your respiratory quotient changes and you basically start to turn your body into more of a fat-burning machine, as well as you increase your cardiovascular fitness or your MVO2, maximal volume of oxygen uptake, you will maintain increasing fat usage at a higher intensity. For example, if you look at an elite marathon runner, they run at an intensity of around about 90% of maximal heart rate or 90% of MVO2, but they're still very much using 90% of the energy comes from fat. So even at that very high intensity of running, they're still using mainly fat because they're so well conditioned. Where an unconditioned person, if you look at the average person, if they start running at 60% of maximal heart rate, they'll be using probably 60 to 70% of the energy will be coming from carbohydrate, and 30 to 40% will be coming from fat. So obviously that respiratory quotient is not going to last them a long period of time because they'll fatigue quickly because they've got greater accumulation of lactic acid. Plus, if they keep going like a marathon, they'll run out of carbohydrate fairly quickly. But as they get fitter, the body reserves your carbohydrate stores and increases your utilization of fat and maintains that high percentage as you get fitter, as you increase your MVO2. Some other changes from a muscular point of view, your body, the muscles will become what we call more capillarized. So what that basically means is, as you know, you in your blood vessels, you have your arteries that breaks down into your arterioles, and then that breaks down even deeper down into your capillaries. And if you lined up all your capillaries in your body, it would go around the earth. That's how many capillaries you have in your body. And a lot of them are only one cell diameter. So basically, you have all this network of like channels of blood that you could utilize. So as you get fitter, you open up these capillaries so you can supply more blood deeper into the working muscles. So that's what we call capillarization of your muscles. Therefore, you get a greater supply of and a deeper supply of blood deep into your muscles where the mitochondria are for you to produce energy. As you get fitter, you also improve what we call your lactic tolerance. So your ability to tolerate lactic acid. An unfit person, if they start to go anaerobic, they start to feel nauseated, they start to get a bit jelly leg, they'll start to feel a bit green, and they, you know, if you really push them, they'll start throwing up at the worst case scenario. But as someone gets fitter, the body actually adapts and actually starts to be able to drive lactic acid through the Krebs cycle straight away to use as energy. So basically, an elite athlete thrives on lactic acid, where the general population will throw up on lactic acid. But that tolerance can be improved over a particular time, notwithstanding the growth in your mental strength. But I'll get more into that soon. Now, that's looking at your cardiovascular system. Let's have a look at the improvements that can also indirectly improve your cardiovascular fitness by making your muscles more efficient. So when you start exercising, A, your muscles get stronger. If you're not used to exercise, your muscles get stronger. So if your muscles get stronger, then you're using, just say if you're running and your body weight's the same weight, so it's a constant force, it's a constant load, and if your leg muscles are stronger, then with every run or every rep will be a lower percentage of your 1RM rep for that step. So as you get stronger, you'll be using a lower percentage of your maximal strength to propel yourself for each repetition, whether it be a bike or running or rowing, whatever it might be. With that in itself, because you're using a lower percentage of your maximum strength, then you're working at a lower intensity, even you maintain the same speed. Therefore, it's just like you, that your muscles will fatigue. So that's why strength training can be quite beneficial for cardiovascular exercise such as running, because actually as you get stronger, you actually every step you take is a lower percent of your maximal strength. Not to mention that you're also working your stabilizers, your antagonist muscle groups to help stabilize the joints. Therefore, your movement becomes far more efficient. As you get stronger, you increase your motor unit recruitment activation. Therefore, as you get stronger, you'll be using less motor units to activate the same amount of force per rep. When I say rep, per running stride, or when it comes to cadence. You improve your firing rate of those motor units to increase efficiency. You increase your synchronization of your activation of motor units. So therefore, your muscles start working more efficiently. If you're working more efficiently, then there's less work needed to work efficiently. Therefore, they'll put less work on the muscles, less work on the cardiovascular system, and less work on the aerobic energy system. Remember, think of a car. If everything's revving high, everything's revving high in the engine. But if you can get your revs on your muscles working efficiently, see, then the cardiovascular system won't have to work as hard to supply the same amount of oxygen, because the muscles aren't requiring the same amount of work because they're working more efficiently. You know, so let's use this as an example. Let's look at swimming, for example. The people who burn the most energy swimming are people who can't swim. If you get someone who can't swim, throw them in the deep end and watch them burn the energy off, because they're so inefficient in swimming. But if you look at the efficient swimmers, like the Olympics, they just glide through the water like a dolphin. They're so efficient. So the more efficient you become at running, the less energy you use to run. If the more efficient you become at swimming, the less energy you use to swim. I use a personal example. I just came from the World Championships. I'm very efficient at fighting. That's what I do. I never get tired when I fight. But most of my opponents do get tired because they don't fight efficiently. Why? Because I've learned to be very efficient. So I can work at the same speed. I can work at their same intensity. I can work at the same workload. But I'm very efficient in how I fight. So I never lose my breath. Where the opponent, one of my opponents I fought, in the second round, I could see he was fatiguing. He was getting slow, he was starting to puff. And I was just keep going the same because I was efficient. So as you get fitter, you get more efficient. If you look at marathon runners, you know, they just glide. They're not puffing. It's interesting a concept, excuse me, when you look at a marathon. I use this as an example, just like any event. And this was taught to me by someone who's run 30 marathons. He said to me, you know, it's easier to run a 2.5 hour marathon than it is to run a 4.5 marathon. And I thought, wow, that doesn't make sense. But then I started thinking about it and I said, yeah, you're right. Well, the first reason is A, if you want to have a look at it, go to the finish line of a marathon and have a look at the 2.5 hour runners running across the finish line, and you watch them run across the finish line. They sprint across the line and they look like they just started the marathon. They're bounding across, then they stop and they walk off. Then look at the 4.5 marathon runners, and they're trudging along. They almost look death on two legs. They're huffing. They look like they're pale. They're losing their coordination. They're stumbling, and they get across the line and they collapse, and they're moaning and groaning. Well, first thing is, the fitter you are, the easier marathon is. The other aspect is, if you do a 2.5 marathon versus a 4.5 marathon, the 4.5 marathon has been out there for an extra 2 hours, pounding their body for an extra 2 hours. So, of course, it's going to be a lot harder. And they're out there because they're not very efficient. So as you get more efficient, muscular-wise, joint-wise, intramuscular coordination, inter-joint coordination, your technique will all contribute to making the execution of the performance even better. You will work your stabilizers more efficiently. You disinhibit your antagonist, which is your antagonist there to stabilize the joints against the antagonist from dominating the joints. We will release those joints so your agonist can use them more effectively. And overall, you'll get stronger specifically to that particular sport. So I've covered lots of territory. Obviously, people think fitness is, oh yeah, you get fit because you get more oxygen to the working muscles. Well, yeah, that's true. That's one of the many things. But as a fitness professional, you know, I think it's wise for you to go deeper than that, to build your confidence, to say, okay, fitness isn't just one thing. Fitness is a collaboration of lots of different things that contribute to an end result. And notwithstanding the power of mental toughness and mental strength is also fitness, mental fitness. Obviously, the more you train, the more mentally tough you become. So, yes, you know, when you're conditioning people, you're conditioning them to prepare them mentally, because the body will only go where the mind will allow it. And many times as a trainer, you have to prepare your clients that, you know, you might get a little bit uncomfortable here, but that will go away. You might get a bit of muscle soreness here, but that will go away. You find that you huff and puff, but that will go away. And if I wanted to, a lot of people fall in love with the results of fitness. And if there's anything which I could recommend, is if you focus always on the results of fitness, you'll always hate the training. If you want the results of fitness, the art is to learn to love the training. Because you have to love the training to keep doing the training. And there's a slow process, and it's important as a fitness professional that you slowly progress them into loving the training, to love, like Arnie Schwarzenegger would love. He loves the pump. Watch the movie Pumping Iron, which is one of the old classic bodybuilding movies, and, you know, bodybuilders get hooked on the pump. And his description is, you know, when I go in there and I lift weight and I get that pump, it's like having an orgasm. And this is his words. I wouldn't personally relate it to that, but that's his words. But that's why he's 7 times Mr. Olympia and everyone knows who he is, because he gets so hooked on the pump. And his quote is like, it's great because I go in the gym all day and I orgasm all day long. Means to him, he'd love the pump that much that he wanted to do it again. And, you know, a long-distance runner, you would have heard of the saying of a running high. They get high on running. So the art, in my personal belief, is that people who achieve long-term success fall in love with the training. It won't happen initially, But if you're only focusing on the love of the result, you never get it, because you only get the result if you go through the for choice of better words, the pain or torture of training. But if you can turn over time that pain into pleasure, or that feeling of that pain in your lungs into, wow, I feel alive, or that burn in the legs as, I feel my legs transforming and getting stronger. And so I think it's important that you prepare that, because, yes, the hardest part of training a person is in that initial stages where that pain is such an adjustment. But if you can get them through that and you can prepare them for that and know and let them know that that pain will change, will turn, transform into pleasure, or that burn will transfer into an orgasm, I wouldn't use that term, where that they'll start getting hooked on that, and then results will take care of themselves. Because whether you're in any profession whatsoever, a lot of people love the idea of becoming wealthy, but they never become wealthy. Well, the people who become wealthy love the processes that you have to go through, the losing money, the gaining money, the hard work. They fall in love with the work. Anyone who's successful, people call them a workaholic, because they get hooked on the work. And as a byproduct of being hooked on the work, they get the money, they get the success, they get the wealth, they get the glory. Anyone who's a great athlete falls in love with the training. They can't help but train. They just love the training. And the byproduct of that is they win the championship, or they get the result, or they look fantastic, or whatever it might be. Bodybuilders are a classic. They get hooked on the pump and the training and all the training, and they get the result. I think they overdo it, but they overdo it because they're hooked on it. They're junkies on exercise. So for what it's worth, you could focus on the pleasures of the result, but I think if you can go a bit deeper and start to, guide your clients into enjoying the pleasures of your lungs opening up, or running through the rain, or running through the mud, or feeling the pump, or feeling the burn, or whatever it might be. Because I know for me, being an athlete, when I'm training, and I feel that burn, I don't see it as pain. I see it as progress. That's what I go for, because that's the thing that's going to give me the glory. So it's a slow process, but I think you eventually have to get people hooked on the process, or hooked on the training, to get the result, and to turn those pains into pleasures. It's just how you look at it. The other progress is, if you look at start with little steps, like Heather Turnland did. She just started with little steps and progressed, a little progress. Don't overdose them initially, because you put them off. Give them little doses, little doses, little doses, and always turn those dosages into positives. Always turn those feelings into positives. Now, we always say the basic principle, getting someone started, I'll use the principle. Number one is just get them moving. Number one, move. Just move. Just start. How long should I go for? Doesn't matter. Go for a minute. Go for 30 seconds. Stop when you want to stop. But don't give them a set amount, because what if they fall short? Then they feel they failed. So just get them started. The step number two is move more. So the next time you come back, try to do a little bit more than you did last time. Try to do a little bit more than you did last time. Try not to go faster yet. Just change one thing at a time. Maybe you initially might want to increase the volume, means the time of what they're exercising. They go from 1 minute to 2 minutes, 2 minutes to 3 minutes. Before they're doing three, they're doing four. But once they get up to four, the body has warmed up, the hormones are being released, they're starting to get those happy hormones floating, the synovial joint's being released, the oxygen's being supplied, they get into a rhythm, and they don't stop at four, they go to six. They get to six, and they eventually do seven. They do seven, they get to 10. And you build that up to the amount of time they have available in their busy lifestyle. So don't make sure you don't steal time from other important aspects in their life, whether it be stealing from their family life or work life or recreational life. Just work within. Don't try to get their life to wedge into their exercise program. Get the exercise program to wedge into their life. And once you've got the volume up to the time that they can allocate, then in that volume, try to increase, move faster. or increase the intensity in that time frame. So, you know, they may only get up to 10 minutes on the treadmill and they're only walking at 5 kilometres per hour. So let's go up to 5.5 this time. And you're up to 6. And you just get to 6 and you're up to 7. And try to go to 7.5 and increase the amount of work. Put as much as you have into everything you got. So, you know, if you've only got 10 minutes, work as hard as you can in that 10 minutes. And then once you get to that, then you can start to, number one, move. Number two, move more. Number three, move faster. Number four, move differently. Move differently could be a variety of things. Could be mixing up from treadmill to bike. You might do 5 minutes of the treadmill, 5 minutes on the bike. If you want to mix it up with a different type of exercise, which is the type of exercise, you may want to move differently by changing the intensity. Start to implement interval training. 1 minute slow, 1 minute hard. 1 minute slow, 1 minute hard. 1 minute slow, 1 minute hard. Now what you're doing is you're pushing their anaerobic threshold up. You're increasing their cardiovascular fitness because in 1 minute you can really take their heart rate up to the 80, 90, 95% of maximal heart rate. Because the higher the heart rate is, the more you're going to push your anaerobic threshold or increase your cardiovascular fitness. But you don't have to do 95% maximum heart rate for the 10 minutes. You may just do it for the 5 of those 10 minutes, 1 minute on, 1 minute off. You might do 30-second intervals, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds out, depending on what they can handle. You may not just go to a minute. You might do 15 seconds on, 45 seconds off. 15 seconds on, 45 seconds off. And then build that to 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. Then you may build up to 45 seconds on. Then you might give them 45 seconds off. 45 seconds on, 45 seconds off. Then 1 minute on, 1 minute off. I know in my own training, I mix it up between 30 seconds and 1 minute. Because even at 1 minute, the intensity comes down a bit because I have to endure 1 minute. And yet I can go a lot faster if I only do 30 seconds. So then that's when you can start moving differently. But how does it all start? Number one, move. Number two, move more. Number three, once you got the time limit that sets into their lifestyle or their goal or their want or their desire, then move faster in that time frame. And then move differently. Mix up the exercises and mix up the intensity. But always keep in mind of what they're training for and what their goals are. So there's a nice broad spectrum of the physiological adaptations that occur as you get fitter. B, always keeping in mind fit for what. And C, how do you get them there? How do you start them from a standing start over time to achieving what they want to achieve? And that's going to be very different for each individual client, and that may change over time. So when you look at, say, a training for a distance event, and traditionally speaking, what people have approached in their training program is, just say I'll use Shayla. How about I use you, Shayla?
Sure.
Well, so you're doing a 10K run, right? I'll use 10K because it's a nice round number. And just say your goal, and I'm gonna make up a goal for you. No, well, I'll make it real. What would be a great time to do a 10K run in for you, Shayla?
I would like to do that at least an hour and a half.
Okay, so looking at 90 minutes. So how about, okay, so I'm going to change. So I'll make it 1 hour for you, okay, because it's easy calculations, so I don't have to get out my calculator. So to do a 10K run in 1 hour, you have to run at how many kilometres per hour? 10 kilometres per hour, right? It's not half math. You know, half math. Now, you can work it out for 1.5 hours, but I'm going to make it really simple. So just say someone wants to do, I want to do a 10K run. I want to do it in 1 hour, and I've got so many months to prepare for it. So what traditional way of programming people have approached is that, okay, I'll go out there and I'll just do a bit of a jog, and they might start jogging at, say, 6 kilometres an hour, and over time, and they cover a certain distance. And then over time, they cover distance. They might do a 1K, and then a 2K, and then do a 5K, and a 6K. And they play around with the kilometres. And they start saying, well, I don't know how far to run today, but I'll just plug jog along. And they eventually get up to 10K over time, but they're only running at about, you know, 7 kilometres per hour. And then they try to get faster in that 10K. Did that make sense to everybody? So basically what you do is you go out there, you don't run at 10 kilometres an hour to start with, you run a lot slower, you build up the distance, and then over time you build up the distance, and then you try to build up the speed and the intensity to meet that 10 kilometres per hour to meet your goal of running 10 kilometres in 1 hour. Well, here's a different approach, right? And to me, this is a far more time-efficient approach, my far more logical approach. So rather than hopping on the treadmill and you're unfit and you start running at 5 kilometres an hour or 6 kilometres an hour and you're plogging along and you don't know how long to go for because nothing is comparison, why don't you just get on the treadmill and put on 10 kilometres an hour? And just run as far as you can at 10 kilometres an hour. So you may only last 30 seconds. Then bring it back down to a walk, catch your breath, take it back out to 10 kilometres an hour. You may only last 20 seconds. Bring it back down to a walk. And that's your first workout. So your first workout may only be 5 minutes because you only can sustain so many intensities of 10 kilometres an hour because you're not conditioned for 10 kilometres an hour. But now you know exactly what 10 kilometres an hour is like to run at. And at the moment it's pretty hard. But then you come back in a couple of days' time and you do it again. But this time, when you go for 10 kilometres for an hour the first time, you last, instead of lasting 30 seconds, you last 35 seconds. Then you bring it back down and you have catch your breath and go again. So now your training is from day one specific to the speed that you have to run the race in. Because most people, their training is not specific in any way, shape or form to the end result. They're running at 6 kilometres an hour and they're doing 2 kilometres or 5 kilometres. Nothing about that is related to the end result. But at least now the speed's related to the end result. All you're working on now is the distance. So over the coming months, what's going to happen to the amount of time that you can sustain 10 kilometres for? It will just increase. And now you get exact, precise feedback of now I can run, you know, I can run 1 kilometre at 10 kilometres an hour. I can run 2 kilometres at 10 kilometres an hour. I can run 3 kilometres at 10 kilometres an hour. I can run 4, I can run 5, run 6, run 7, run 8. And before you know it, it's not if, it's just when, you can run 10 kilometres at 10 kilometres an hour. So there's no guesswork. Everything is exactly precise to the intensity of the run that your goal is set at. So you start with the end in mind, rather than starting with mixing and playing around with different variables, but none is actually really related to the end result, and hoping at the end you get the distance and you up the intensity and it all comes together. Well, this is more, and obviously over time your volume will increase. At the start your volume will be low because you can't do 10 kilometres an hour for very long for intervals, but over time as you get fitter your intensity stays the same, but the volume just goes up, and eventually the volume will meet the distance, and then you'll be able to run the 10 kilometres per hour for the 10 kilometres to meet the goal. Different way of looking at it, and that's the way I train for my sport.
That's